Hello, and welcome to Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick. My name is Jay.
I'm Nick.
And I'm, who let the dogs out? I did. Who let the dogs out?
Too soon?
I'm Ramsay Bolton. I let the dogs out. I did.
Oh, my God. I don't know.
Didn't expect that at all.
Yeah, hey, dogs have to eat.
I get it, but I don't know if who let the dogs out references are ever, you know, okay and not groan worthy.
What are you talking about? I'm just stating a fact. Ramsay Bolton let the dogs out, and I'm just saying who let the dogs out.
Uh-huh.
Very popular song from the 90s?
Early
2000s?
How did these guys know the Game of Thrones would have a scene where they let the dogs out and tore apart a young baby, an infant, and a mother?
It's definitely one of those scenes that Colleen was like, oh, no, I'm done with this show if they kill the baby. I was like, well, it makes sense. She was like, how could you say that? It makes sense.
If you're gonna get killing the baby, I get the whole killing the baby thing because it's the bloodline thing, and you know he doesn't want to give up the throne. But do you have to let the dogs out? Of course, I guess you have to let them out. But I'm waiting to see that on the. If I had the talent, I would have already had that. I would have put that on the internet last night.
Well, it's not
over and over.
But it's not who let the dogs out. I did. It's who let the dogs out. Who? That's the.
But I've always said I did because.
But
it's
that's
always,
not. That's, oh, God, whatever.
But hold on a second. I don't want people thinking I let the dogs out. It wasn't me. It was Ramsay Bolton who let the dogs. I don't want to get blamed for letting the dogs. I don't need the hate mail.
Well, as you say, I got the death stare from the wife. It was like, how could you think? I was like, well, I'm not going to kill a baby. I'm just saying from Ramsay's perspective, he can't have a usurper to the throne or something like
he
that.
He just killed his dad.
Yeah. Like,
what
but
are
again,
we
it's
What are we doing here, Ramsay? Where's your papa?
I was more upset when they burnt the poor, what's her name, last season. That was horrible.
Oh, yeah. But
I guess all is forgiven for Melisandre.
At least they didn't show it, so I think that's okay.
With Melisandre, is all forgiven for burning?
No.
No?
I think she brought back Jon Snow.
Spoiler alert, Jon Snow is back.
I think people will forgive her, but you're still responsible for a poor girl being burned to death alive.
Hey, let's focus on the real. Yeah. She brought back Jon Snow.
Well, but could she go get the ashes and kind of rub them together and see if she can bring her back? I mean, come on now.
Well, yeah, and especially after she just sat there and saying, I'm fake. Everything I did was a lie. It's like, oh, so the burning was unnecessary? What was that about then?
Which crime is worse? Ramsay Snow letting the dogs out?
Or
burning the child at the stake?
Alive.
Probably the child is alive.
Probably the dogs. That's probably a painful. I mean, burning alive is painful, but usually you would pass out from the smoke inhalation before you would feel the flames.
I don't know. She was screaming pretty good there.
Very true.
Actually, the worst guy is her dad sitting there, like going, "I can't watch this. This is terrible."
Well, he got his comeuppance.
I know, but still, he's like, I probably shouldn't have done that.
But let's talk about the big news here, guys. The thing that broke the internet, Jon Snow is back alive.
Well,
what are you guys' thoughts?
Well, Jack and I knew it.
Well, yeah, sure. It was a theory that everybody had and that everybody thought would come true, but it actually came true. Like, during the whole time, I was like, they're probably just leading us on. He's dead. And then,
why would they keep for two episodes? They don't drag things on Game of Thrones. Why would they have? why would they have it two episodes of his body sitting? No, it's not like it's.
It's Game of Thrones drag stuff on. It's like that's what they do the first half of the season.
It's not The Walking Dead.
That's true.
I'm sorry. People that aren't caught up with The Walking Dead. I'm sorry. I apologize.
But Nick, Mr.
Rick lets out these dogs, this pregnant woman, and
Nick, as a book historian, what is your thoughts on the big reveal here that Jon Snow's alive?
What did I think about it?
Yeah,
I was a bit shocked it happened in the second episode. I was thinking third or fourth, so that did kind of come out of nowhere. It's like, oh wow.
Well, wouldn't he start to smell the fourth episode? It's like, come on.
It is cold up there.
Yeah.
That's true. I forgot.
Dead people hold well up there. But yeah, are you happy?
A popsicle at that point. But I knew he was going to come back. I mean, it just had to happen. The question is now, though, will he be Jon Snow? That's the question. Will he be, like I said, like it will be a Gandalf the White, Gandalf the Grey type thing? I don't think his wounds will heal. I think he'll have those forever, and like he'll be like kind of like almost like a zombie. At least that's what I'm thinking. Because I mean, he's been dead for, what do you think, 2-3 days now?
I think at least. So is he going to walk around like this?
Just be a rotting corpse of a body?
Yeah. I'm Jon Snow, the bastard zombie.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll be like a rotting body.
Well, you know what isn't like a rotting body? the latest Loot Crate over at lootcrate.com/JandJack. For less than $20 a month, you can get $45 worth of geeky goodness today over at lootcrate.com/JandJack. If you sign up by going to that link, a little kickback gets sent back the Jay and Jack Productions way. So if it's something that you're interested in, check it out. But yeah, I would say I would be upset if it wasn't Jon Snow that's back. But I would maybe like a little less gullible Jon Snow, maybe a little more, you know, refined Jon Snow.
He's been killed. I think he would be a little less gullible. At least I hope. Once you've been killed, and by the kid that you think is on your side, gives the final nail in the coffin. I think you should be a little less gullible.
Yeah, well, I think if you remember back in season 2 or 3, that the guy that was constantly brought back, Dondarrion,
right?
He said that like every time he is brought back, he feels less and less of himself. And so with Jon having been dead now for 3 days at least, he might not be himself. He might be a little harder of a guy. Who knows where he went?
Maybe he doesn't have the nice hair.
Yeah. Well, she maybe did comes cut back. It off.
Yes. Yeah. So maybe he has a little bald look to him. Would that make the women mad though? Wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the shorter hair he can pull off, but like bald, I think it just makes anybody look more ugly.
Well, I'm just saying.
I agree.
If there has to be a difference, okay, make him bald, Jon Snow. Then he'll just be angry, mean Jon Snow.
Well, I think it's just your wish. He's like, he's too handsome. Got to knock him down a peg.
I am jealous of the hair. I mean, it's just not fair.
Well, he's short from what I understand in real life, so there you got that on him.
He's like, I think he's 5'4" or 5'5".
Yeah. Really? He's that short?
Yeah, tiny.
Well, I remember at Comic-Con seeing him stand up, and he was, well, compared to me, yeah, he's short. But, you know, I think he's shorter than Ygritte, and Ygritte, the girl that played that's not that tall either.
Huh. So there you go. For those wondering why Nick sounds like he's in an old 40s radio serial, his internet out in Tennessee is not cooperating so well. So we have patched him in through a landline, 100-year-old technology.
The possums are no longer on the wheel, so his internet has stopped working.
But yes, hopefully I think the solution is Nick just needs to get a job in Raleigh so he can do it here with us. That's what I think the solution is.
Are you trying to get a job here in Raleigh?
I've applied to many jobs, actually, in North Carolina.
Okay.
Durham got back to me. The city of Durham got back to me not too long ago and said that I was on the list, but they're not, you know, they're still early on in the process.
Well, they have real internet there. So that could.
Oh, really?
My offices are in Durham, so
that could be a selling point.
Yeah, exactly.
We're not going to pay you, but we have real internet.
Well, let's get into breaking down this episode. Nick, where do we start off here with this fantastic episode?
Right, this episode is just action packed. Can't see them really surpassing the amount of information we got in this episode. But we start off with Bran, his first appearance back. He was out of season 5 altogether. And we see him north of the wall, laid out on the floor with the three-eyed crow. He's basically getting a green seeing vision into the past. And the vision is in Winterfell. And at first you're not quite sure who it is, because I thought maybe it was a young Robb fighting or something, learning how to fight, but actually Bran speaks up and says, oh, wow, it's Ned. It's my dad. And he's teaching young Benjen, the uncle that we haven't seen since season one, learning how to fight in Winterfell. What'd you guys think of that?
It's awesome. And I love, and I was going to ask you, is this something like a flashback in the books we haven't seen, and now they're going to use Bran's vision ability to kind of bring some of these flashbacks that were part of the books that we haven't gotten to see yet?
Well, as far as the books, there's only one true vision so far that Bran has seen, and it has not been shown yet.
Okay.
I think what they're going to do here is probably, I would say, in at least the next couple of episodes, they're getting the audience orientated to what is going on,
yeah.
Showing that Bran is developing the skill to be able to see into the past or possibly the present. So we understand, this scene where he's seeing Ned and Benjen fight is not in the book.
Can I say up if a couple other things wouldn't have happened in this episode, this would have been my favorite scene.
Yeah, it was really cool.
I mean, I like flashbacks, especially if they're done well. And it just, like I said, at first I thought it might have been him. He was seeing him as a younger thing. And then I go, oh. So I personally loved the scene. I thought it was great.
Well, you're a flashback lover. It's well known.
I am a flashback lover.
So the Hodor background, did we know that anywhere, or was that just something new in this scene?
We did know his name, which I was going to get into that a little bit in the book section.
Okay, perfect.
But,
that's fine.
But it's nothing really, anything special. But, when we see Hodor come out, he actually speaks, and you actually hear his name. And the book part of it is that they call him Willis. In the show, which is wrong. His name is actually Walder in the book.
Interesting.
And
what you talking about, Willis?
Yeah, we should talk about Willis. But I assume that they changed this for the same reason they changed Theon's sister's name to Yara, is because it's just too similar. Because if they called him Walder, they would think like Walder Frey.
Right.
And so they're trying to make these names a little bit more memorable. It's like, oh, Willis. There's no one named Willis, so let's just call him Willis.
Ah, okay.
But we also see, there's also a neat little Easter egg, but it's a neat little thing. Like when you see Lyanna, because that's an important character that you're going to see about next week, I assume. You see Lyanna, which is Eddard's sister, come riding in on a horse. She's very tomboyish. And Ed has often said that Arya takes after Lyanna. And you can hear her kidding around with Eddard and Benjen, and you hear her actually say, you know, Eddard, you better be careful. You're about to go to the Vale soon, which is when he's getting sent off to be fostered by the Aerons of the Vale. This is where he meets Robert Baratheon, and their friendship begins as children. So it's a neat little Easter egg of things to hear if you're watching that scene.
It was... It was really awesome. Really like that that they're putting it in there as we're kind of winding down or winding up to getting towards the conclusion of the show. It's nice that we're kind of going back into the history a little bit here. So really liked it.
Right. Yeah. We even see old Nan, but she's not quite old yet. We see middle-aged Nan, which was the nanny who Joffrey had her head cut off once they take over, if you remember that in King's Landing, and he pointed it out to her on the spike next to her dad's.
Yep.
Next to Ed's, okay. And then you can see, like, Bran is actually really happy. It's the first time that he's known happiness in a long time, and he doesn't really want to go away. But, of course, kind of like cutting off the internet, the three-eyed crow just puts his hand on his shoulder and says, oh, well, we're gone.
Max von Sydow, I thought he died, the actor, but apparently he's still alive.
No, that was just in Star Wars.
Yeah.
But
which that movie you loved, by the way.
I loved that movie. It was so good. Yeah. Bran, when he comes to, he looks at Hordor and says, "I saw you," you know, and you could speak. You know, what happened? And of course, it's like, do you really expect Hordor to say anything other than?
Well,
you know,
actually,
Hordor.
I just prefer to simplify things in life and just focus on the.
It's easier to remember my lines.
Yeah. But Bran inquires where Mira is, and so Hordor picks Bran out, and they carry him outside outside the cave, which is strange because they're not protected out there by the magic of the children of the forest. And he tells Mira that, you know, they shouldn't be out here, but then changes the subject and is trying to tell her about the vision, to where she just turns around and kind of annoyed, like she's lost hope or she's not content in her purpose because she doesn't feel she has a purpose.
Well, she's not seeing anything, right? So she just...
Right.
What does she have to do?
Yeah, and fair sir, she's been there for, what, at least a year? Kind of just being bored out of her mind?
There's nothing. No internet. So. It's like she's in Tennessee. There's no internet. She's just... Seriously, what is there for... she's bored.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure there's action to come for her. She just needs to enjoy the peace time while she has it.
Exactly.
Fighter. She's a fighter.
Yeah. Because that's what happens, exactly. Right? As soon as Bran sees that she's kind of in a foul mood and goes back inside with Hordor, a child of the forest appears and tells Mira that Brandon needs her, and she's like, why would he need me? And then she says that, like, in a very dark, cryptic way, says that, you know, he's not going to be here forever, and when he leaves, he's going to need her. So you don't know what that means, but, I mean, I guess just to wheel him around or something, but
yeah,
we'll see.
It's true.
Okay. On to the next scene, we have the wall, and Thorne is standing outside the door again, demanding that Ser Davos and the remainder of the Night's Watch give up, that no one needs to die tonight. But we've already known from the previous episode that Davos is not going to have this. He thinks they're all going to be killed, which, as you can see, that they're surrounded by, you know, guys with crossbows. So this is clearly Davos was planning on killing them.
Yeah.
And Davos apologizes to the men of the Night's Watch. Because he's never been known as a fighter,
and it's going to be ugly. It's going to be ugly.
He grabs Jon Snow's sword. Actually, I don't know if anybody noticed that. He grabs Longclaw and begins to prepare for their final stand.
Yep.
And as Thorne's men begin to hammer down the door, a loud wood breaking crack sounds, and they all look to and see the giant. Num-Num's his name, and the rest of the wildlings come crashing through the weak south side of the wall to where the Night's Watch just kind of stand there stunned, and Thorne yells at them for being cowards, but heck, you got this giant there, and you're surrounded by wildlings. What are you going to do? To which one guy actually shoots an arrow into Num-Num, and one of the best deaths, I think, in the show. I loved it. I thought that was hilarious. You know, Num-Num just paints the walls red with him, and...
Oh, that would have been enough for me to lower my bow.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Did anybody not expect for this to happen? Like, cause I was like, oh man, the wildlings are going to come, and they're going to come.
Well, in order for Jon Snow to survive, it'd be brought back, it had to happen.
But I loved it. It felt like to me in Return of the King, when Aragorn has that ghost army and he just brings them in, they just decimate everything. It was a fun scene. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and it's funny because, like, you know, I know everybody wants Oily, the little kid, to die because he betrayed Jon Snow, but even him was like, wow, like he's really drank the Kool-Aid, you know?
Yeah,
he wants to fight back.
So I think you channel that. I think Jon Snow, his first thing to do is get him back on his side.
I think he
forgives him. I think you have to. I think the kid's a fighter.
Well, stab me once, shame on you. Stab me twice, shame on me.
But I think he brings him back to the fold because the kid does have a right to hate the wildlings.
He does.
He saw his whole family destroyed. He was a kid. He's still a kid.
Yeah. I don't like what he did,
but I think Jon Snow's. Jon Snow, part of him still has a heart. He's going to say, okay, kid, stay with me.
He's like, I can't stay mad at you.
Yeah, you know.
You old backstabber, you.
Look at this hole you gave me right here. Yeah, it's great.
Seriously,
my hair? I lost all my hair. I'm bald now because of it. That's okay. I'm not supposed to have women anyway, so there you go.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Oh, well. So the next scene we see is in King's Landing at what I assume is like an outdoor pub or something. And we have a bunch of just common folks telling stories about, I assumed it was Cersei's walk of shame.
Yes.
You know? And he's talking about how she's nude, he was nude, and Jaime apparently was not well endowed, so Cersei saw his manhood and was impressed. And why would he lie about this? He doesn't lie about these things.
I saw the walk of shame. I don't think she was thinking that.
Yeah. You know, in almost every case, a man never overestimates the length of his member. Never.
No.
Never.
It's always accurate.
No. Especially a drunk guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in the second awesome skull-splitting death of this episode,
this might have been this one was better.
Yeah, I liked it too. It's just like, you know, the guy telling the joke walks out. He's having a pee, and just the mountain, zombie mountain, doesn't give him any privacy. That's
no.
For sure. Turns around and just
which was bad just, enough.
Yeah, just shoves his head right into the wall, and he's like, "Whoa!" But it makes me wonder what's underneath that helmet, because it's just gray and blue and just.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Hopefully Jon Snow doesn't start looking like that, but it's definitely like,
Well, Jon Snow have to wear a mask.
I don't think he'll start looking like that, Jon. I think he'll look pretty much normal, but we'll see. And then the mountain then magically appears in front of Cersei to escort her to her daughter's, to Marcella's funeral, but they're confronted by a large group of Lannister men that, and then they find out that King Tommen ordered Cersei to remain in Red Keep, to which she objects strongly, but she has no choice in the matter.
The lead guy was very happy that Cersei
yes.
said.
Oh, absolutely. Because you kind of wonder about that. Like, would the? I'm sure the mountain could probably kill every single one of them. It's not
he
like
could.
Die,
oh,
yeah.
Because
yeah,
they're like, going, yeah, please, your lady, please. You know, it's not my fault.
Yeah, it's.
But he had a great look at the end of the thing. He was like, oh, thank God.
Yeah, I would have been him. Actually, I wouldn't even gone. I was like, I'm not going over there. You do it.
Okay. I tell you what. I'll tell him, but I'm going to be in behind you guys. And if you guys need help, I'll run back and get some help.
Yeah, for sure.
And then see, the next scene, there's a lot of scenes in this episode I really enjoyed. I mean, yeah. I know there's some people, really diehard book readers didn't care for some of it, but I really enjoyed like this next scene with Tom and Jamie and the High Sparrow.
Yeah.
I don't think there was a bad scene in this episode.
No, I don't think so either. I think it was I mean, there's definitely a couple of lines, like Tyrion's penis joke is a bit kind of like, okay, he's kind of done that. But I thought every scene
But I think
was
it
great.
All advanced, every scene advanced the story, I thought.
Mm-hmm. But okay. So the next thing we see is Tommen and Jaime standing over Marcella's body. And this is really interesting because Tommen suspects that Cersei was behind the responsible for Trystane's death, the
right.
prince from Dorne. And
I think that's fair.
It's fair, but like. And I need to kind of apologize to the listeners. Last week's episode, I said the wrong name instead of Trystane. I was saying. What's his name? There's another son that the Prince of Dorne has, and I kept saying his name instead of Trystane, so I was surprised that no one actually called me out on that thing. Guy doesn't even know what he's talking about.
But, we said you were drunk.
Yeah, I probably was. Last week, that's the one thing that confused me. I'm not sure if it confused you guys, but... Because Trystane was actually in King's Landing Harbor when he was killed by his two cousins. And I kind of felt they didn't explain that, like where he was, because he's just floating on a boat.
That's true.
And so, but anyway, I'm glad
boat.
I just wanted to clear that up before we proceed.
Yeah. That's a good call.
Yeah. But,
So Tommen assumes that his mother kills Trystane.
Right. But, So Jamie kind of asks Tommen, like, are you mad at your mother? And he said, no, of course not. And he goes, well, because she has every right to be here. But he refused because he was afraid that the Faith would once again imprison her and keep her in jail, which is, I would say that too. But he, admits he has felt weak this entire time because he can't protect his own family. You know, they imprisoned his wife, they imprisoned his mother. It's my responsibility to protect the realm. And how can I be respected? How can I do that if I can't even protect my own mother and wife?
Well, Jamie, he's coming to that conclusion, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's young.
He's learning.
Yeah.
He'll learn just in time to get murdered.
Yeah, exactly. Thing is, like, he actually seems like a good kid, and you know it's coming. He's gonna die, and it's just gonna make Cersei even more mad.
It's like, gosh darn it,
Jamie, we need another kid.
But Jamie tells him to go see his mother, ask for her forgiveness for keeping her locked up and not visiting her yet, since they found out that Marcella has died. Enters the High Sparrow, and Tommen actually has a spine, and he demands to see his wife, to which the Sparrow kind of just, you know, she's with us, and you must wait your turn. And I think he might have even gotten himself in trouble if Jaime had spoke up and just said, no, go visit your mom. Because I think Jaime is clearly ready just to go ahead and kill the High Sparrow.
Yeah. It was a great scene between the two of them.
It was an excellent scene.
Jamie claims to the Sparrow, you're a bold man, you know, for having the cojones to just think that he's better than the royalty. But, you know, the Sparrow comes back, no, I actually am quite fearful of the gods, what they'll do to me. And he says, but you humiliated my sister. And he said, but she sought the gods' mercy and atoned for those sins. To which, you know, Jamie then just goes on this rampage of confession, and you kind of, you know, like, I killed my cousin, I killed these, I killed my king, and these are things that are just rumor. You know, he's never really said these things out loud because things that could happen to him. So you kind of wonder why the High Sparrow then just doesn't go, well, you're under arrest too. And then Jamie threatens him with a sword, to which the Faith Militant comes in and surrounds them, and he says, Jamie looks at him and says, I've defeated worse odds than this. And this is, to me, one of the kind of telltale lines in this scene was that it says, yes, you could kill us, but who are we? We're nobody. But together, we can overthrow an empire.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really a telltale of what the Sparrows are going to try to do. They really want to wither away at the foundation of the royalty and make it now kind of a religious kingdom.
Yeah.
So it's definitely going to come to a head.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely, for sure. Like, they're both kind of calling their shots a little bit. But yeah, it was definitely an intense scene that I think will have a payoff later.
You think he didn't arrest Jamie there because he said he didn't want to die, and there was there's no way he could arrest Jamie right there without him, Jamie going, okay, if I'm going, you're going with me.
Exactly.
So I think he's probably waiting. Like you said, Jamie did confess all his sins.
Yeah.
And there's people locked up for a lot less than Jamie's done, so. But we like Jamie now, so we don't want him to get her.
Exactly. I mean, Jamie is definitely that character that you hated for, you know, the first two and a half seasons, and then he slowly wins you over, and you're just like, wow, he's really changing.
He's America's sweetheart now.
Yeah. And
That's who I'm voting for president. Jamie Lannister.
I'd vote for him over these people. But we digress. The next little short scene we have here is between Cersei and Tommen. She's seen there looking out the window at the Great Sept, holding Marcella's necklace that she had given her that she always wore. And Tommen enters. He apologizes for keeping her there and admits that he did it out of fear of losing her. He just doesn't want to do it. He admits that he should have executed the Faith, destroyed the temples, because he is his mother's son. She raised him to be strong, but he needs her help. To which she just forgives him, hugs him, and says, anytime. You know, so.
Sure thing. It really sucked being held captive, but I
guess you're my son, so. That whole walk, yeah, I forgive you. You know, people were spitting on me.
Nothing. All. Yeah, nothing.
No big deal. And BT.
A lot of people have seen me naked. So.
And by a lot of people, I mean your uncle.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're doing it.
And your
uncle slash dad.
Your cousin.
Uncle slash daddy. we digress.
Yeah. All right. Well, on to Marine. Tyrion is drinking wine in the company of Varys, Grey Worm, and Missandei, to which Varys gives a look of disapproval to Tyrion for drinking, I guess, because he's always drinking. And he looks at – it kind of was a funny scene, but I don't think it worked the way that they intended it to work, because he's looking at Varys saying, if I lost my cock, I'd drink all the time, because it's like, come on. But then he realizes that Grey Worm is also a eunuch, so that's why he looks over and says, oh, meaning no offense. You know, it's like, it just kind of, he realized that he's the only one there that had his manhood.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's true. That's true.
Oops.
Yeah. It's like, well, he makes fun of me for being a dwarf, so I guess we're even.
He goes, no, I don't.
Yeah. He goes, no, I don't.
You think it.
Come on.
Oh.
But Varys begins the council meeting by inquiring about the burned fleet, and then Grey Worm responds that there are no witnesses. Of course there's no witnesses. Yeah, the whole fleet burned up. Nobody. Then Tyrion wants to know if there's any good news, and he says, yeah, of course, Astapor and Yunkai have stopped asking for aid. It was great, but no, it's because they've been retaken by the slavers, which is awful news, because these two cities that Dany worked so hard to free are now going to revert back to their old ways. And Missandei and Grey Worm give each other a worried look, because they're kind of starting now to doubt that if Dany doesn't come back, that everything that they've done is just going to go to waste, and they actually might be slaves once again.
Yeah.
Yep.
So Tyrion then claims, what about the dragons? We do have those. We can use them, but Missandei interrupts, says, but the dragons are weak. They haven't eaten since Dany left the city, to where Tyrion has a really great line. Well, first he says, the dragons don't do well in captivity. I know this. And she's like, how do you know? And he's like, I drink, and I know things. But I think that was probably the most quoted line of the entire episode, even though Jon Snow's the news.
Yeah,
I think
that
line.
I love the scene, the history of the dragons, because, again, I love, like, history kind of stuff. Is this something that's been from the books, or maybe, like, the little side stories and stuff like that? Was this known? I guess we'll save it for what happened in the book, stay in the book. But I love this scene in that
sense. Okay, try to remember it, but yeah. Tyrion does say that that if you keep them chained up, if you keep them in constraints, that the history, went down. They were about the size of cats by the end. That they need to be set free, and that for some reason he believes that, oh, these dragons are smart. They'll see that I'm their friend, which I thought was a bit silly, because it's like, okay, I don't care how intelligent you are, you don't walk into the tiger's cage, go, oh.
Well, he had been drinking.
That's true. He had been drinking. But I did love this next little scene, even though it was fairly short. It was intense. It was humorous.
Oh, yeah.
It was great. Tyrion just enters the dragon pit, and you can just feel the tension. It's just silence. With that torch-lit scene, you hear the chains slowly just drug across the floor, so you know the dragons are there, and you don't know what's going to happen. It's just great. And then you see those eyes just come forward, and then slowly a bit of the fire in the mouth of the dragon, and it's just awesome.
Anyone in Game of Thrones can die, so you're like going to... Are they going to kill him off? I don't think they'll kill him off. Could they kill him off? I don't know.
Can you imagine if it would have? Like, is that in that scene, like Tyrion goes in there and all of a sudden just, boom, you're like, holy cow, just dead. I think there would have been riots if Tyrion would have died.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
we brought back Jon.
Yeah.
You can't have it all.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, I would have been much happier with Jon. Than Tyrion. Tyrion, I mean, everyone loves Tyrion. He is the show, to me. He's the wits. He's the funny, he's the kind of the every man's man person in that in the show. But it's funny, you know, as he's bowing to the dragons to show that he doesn't mean them any harm. And of course, he's just trembling in fear. You know, and he's like, "I'm here to help. Please don't eat the help."
it was a great scene, great acting job. It was just fantastic.
Yeah. And then he goes into, you know, the whole story about how he always wanted a dragon ever since he was a little kid, you know, and even just a small dragon, he wanted it, you know, and then when he found out that dragons had been extinct for 150 years, that he cried himself to sleep.
Again, cool scene and just, like, cool context and backstory. I thought it was really neat.
Yeah, it was. It was, and a lot of that is from the book, just the lines, and even though not necessarily what he's doing, because he's not doing that in the book, but what he's talking about, the story about how he wanted a dragon as a child, and his fascination with dragons. He always was as a child. But they are smart. They realize he's there to help them, and he takes the pins out of their collars, and they leave him alone. Then he briskly walks away, and when he sees berries, he says, "If I ever decide to do something that stupid, please punch me in the face." That's great.
But it works, you know. Will we see Tyrion riding a dragon by the end of the season?
That's another in the book section thing I was going to talk about. But yeah, okay. Like that's kind of my theory. Is it's possible? We'll I know there's a lot of people out there that don't want it to happen, but it seems like it might go that way.
Why don't people want it to happen?
It has to do with things that I can get into later. But,
okay, all right.
Yeah. So if you people are really curious that don't want to be spoiled or haven't read the books, then tune in. But I will give you the best answer I can give you.
Okay.
In the fantastic segment, what happens in the book stays in the book.
That's right. So the next thing we see is it's a little short scene, but she's my favorite character, so I always enjoy any scene with Arya. And we see Arya once again begging on the side of the street, and the waif appears to kick the crap out of her once again.
Those are hard scenes to watch.
Yeah. And who doesn't like a good rod to the face or the kidney?
Yeah.
But, you know, she's testing her, and that's what's interesting about it, is that she continues, says, "What's your name?" To which Arya constantly says, "I'm no one." And the waif doesn't believe her. And then she eventually, after the beating is ending, Arya's just swinging at air to where Jaqen H'ghar appears, catching the staff, and he offers her three things. He offers her shelter if she says her name, and she refuses. So I'll offer you food if you say your name. She refuses. Says, "I'll give you back your eyes if you only say your name." To which Arya pauses. She actually thinks about it for a minute, and then she's like, "No." So she's definitely learning. She's seeing that it's everything that is happening is a test to her. And if she wants to be an assassin, truly be no one, that she has to go along with all these things that are happening to her.
Again, I can't help but think Daredevil here, excited to see if she kind of goes the blind superheroine route.
Right. And it's another thing that we'll get into a little bit in the book section, because I know how she does what she does. But Arya's storyline is really all over the place because they're going back between book five and then some of this other stuff that hasn't happened yet, at least it's not been published yet. Because she was supposed to be Cat of the Canals, and that hasn't happened, but yet the guy that she was supposed to assassinate, he was cheating people last season, you know, that was later on. So it's a bit weird, but they're trying to integrate these splintered storylines back in. So
interesting.
I'll be curious just to see how they do it, how they thread this weave, or whatever.
Thread the needle?
Thread the needle, yeah.
Weave
so now
this
we're
basket?
What?
Weave this basket?
Weave this basket, yeah. Whatever. Weave this basket. Yeah.
Sew this quilt?
I'm sorry.
Tapestry?
So the next scene we have is in Winterfell. And Lord Karstark is informing Roose and Ramsay Bolton that they have found the bodies of Bolton men who were in pursuit of Sansa and Theon, to which Ramsay concludes, well, they had to have had help. And and suggest that, but it's not a big deal that she has to be going to the wall to John because it's the only family she has left. And this is a little bit of a nod, also, I think, to the books, because this is kind of happening at the last book as well, that Ramsay assumes that John has Sansa and wants to go to war to get her back, because actually it's his bride. Even though it's not truly the true Sansa in the book, it's a fake Sansa. Or actually, it's a fake Arya. They have, but you know, that's what Ramsay thinks. We have to rid ourselves of the last start because the North will not rally to us unless we are in complete control. To which Roose very wisely says, "No, you can't kill the Lord Commander. The whole North would rally against us because that's the one thing the North does take pride in is that they are the watchers of the Wall. They're the ones to support the Night's Watch." And then Ramsay counters and says, "Well, we already have the three largest houses, which are the Umbers, the Manderleys, and the Karstarks. After we get them, no one will dare oppose us."
Yeah.
And Roose has a really good line here, and I kind of want to almost, I really hope it's kind of a foreshadowing of maybe Ramsay's death, which he says, you know, "If you acquire a reputation as a mad dog, you'll be treated as one, taken out back and slaughtered for pig feed." And you kind of wonder, like, well, is this kind of like a foreshadowing, you know, will Ramsay actually screw up bad enough to where people do to him what he's been doing to other people for so long?
Well, I think he's already past that.
Yeah.
Don't you? I mean, how much more hated could this guy be?
Well, he's not. I mean, he's only hated by the people that, you know, he's hated by the fans, but I don't think anyone out there really knows how he is because he usually kills everybody.
Theon could tell everybody.
It's true. But
look
at
me.
Going back.
Anyway.
Yeah, anyway.
I keep forgetting it's just us fans that see this guy. He's just the most disgusting person in the world. So.
Oh, he's awful. I mean, yeah, I think it, well, we'll get to it in just a second.
Okay.
But just then, the new maester enters and reports that Lady Walda, which was Roose's wife, has given birth to a son. And this scene has been kind of building for the last couple of seasons of
it has, yeah.
This distrust of Ramsay really wanting to take his father's place and being weary of Roose's wife giving a male heir. Because he even threatened him, I think, in the previous episode, whereas, and maybe it's true in that, you know, Lady Walda is carrying a boy. And we see it. Roose is congratulated by Ramsay, gives him a hug, and then Roose actually is a little nice to him. He's like, "You'll always be my firstborn." And Ramsay thanks him and then out of nowhere stabs him. But, you know, were you guys also, like, you weren't sure who stabbed who? Because I kind of thought Roose might have actually stabbed Ramsay for a minute.
Mm-hmm. He should have.
Yeah.
No, I was pretty sure that it was the other way around.
Okay.
It could have, but I was like, to your point, the way the story was leading with Ramsay, this was just its natural conclusion.
Hmm. I kind of felt that Roose, though, I think Roose is the better villain because he's cold and cool, calculating. Everything he does is for a reason. Ramsay is just a mad dog, like he said. He just does things very impulsively. And even though you hate Ramsay more for being just the god-awful person he is, like, Roose, to me, is just the cooler villain.
He is, but we don't want Ramsay to get killed by his dad.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, he needs a more horrible death.
Yeah.
A death befitting his character.
Yeah, exactly. But you see, though, like, the reason why he killed him, I mean, I assume anyway, it's, you know, it's out of fear because he's so afraid that he's failed. You know, he failed to get Theon, he failed to get Sansa back, that his father's going to disinherit him for all of his failures, right. And then where will he be? He'll be
Well, he knows he can't trust his dad either.
Right, exactly. He's learned that. And like I read somewhere not too long ago, it's really an interesting comparison how both the bastards in this show are raised completely differently. As in, you see Ramsay, who's raised by his father, to, once the situation is not in your benefit, betray, 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 which you see he did to Robb Stark. You know, he's done it to all his allies. Whereas you see Jon Snow, who's raised by Ned, an honorable person, he takes Ned's words seriously, as in, you know, whoever gives the sense, let's swing the sword. So it's a very different way of looking at life.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So, the Maester, though, and Lord Karstark are still standing there, and they don't really even move a muscle this entire time, which kind of makes, especially with Karstark, you think that he already kind of assumed that Ramsay was going to kill him.
Yeah.
But the Maester is in a little bit of shock, and Ramsay tells him that Ruse was killed by his enemies by poison, and repeat that, and that's how it's going to be. And then everyone's favorite scene.
Well, and then the other guy kind of reinforced it, saying he's your lord, you know.
Yeah, he's your lord. So he's definitely passed.
Well, how long till he kills that guy? Not the guy behind him, but
the Maester?
The Maester. How long till he kills him?
How long what?
Until he kills the Maester.
So Ramsay kills him, okay?
Oh. Well, Maesters aren't really supposed to be killed, even though they have killed them.
But it's Ramsay.
It's Ramsay, exactly. Because Maesters are supposed to be unbiased, impartial. They're just there to be the servant of their order. And whoever's in charge, that's who they respect. So now he is Lord Bolton, so he kind of has to do what he tells him. The same as like when Theon took over Winterfell and the Maester had to obey his orders. Because
right.
He was at that point actually the Lord of Winterfell.
Oh, I get it, but I just think that this guy's dead man walking, I think.
Very possible. You never know about Game of Thrones. Now the new Lord Bolton calls for Walda and her baby son, to which they show up just outside the dog pits. And this is kind of like an almost echo of Sansa, you know, because he did lead her down, or she walked through the dog pits. And remember, she found Theon in the very last pen. It's the same thing. You kind of had that tension of you're not quite sure if these dogs are going to eat her or not. And this scene was really to kind of confirm in the books that there had always been rumors that Ramsay had killed any heir that Roose Bolton had. And this is just kind of a proof of saying, like, oh, yeah, I am the only heir to the Bolton house. I prefer to be an only child, yeah, exactly. Then here, on to Brienne. Brienne is talking to Sansa about the events that have happened, and she's informing her that Arya is actually alive. To which Sansa's really not excited, but she's definitely curious. Said, "No, I saw her with a man. I didn't know who he was. They were in the Riverlands, and I looked for her for 3 days. And I have not been able to find her." Which kind of leads me to believe. At least I kind of think that, in theory, that Sansa and Brienne might not go to the Wall. Mm-hmm. I think that maybe they might turn and go back down to the Riverlands to maybe look for Arya. Or, they could still go to the Wall to find Jon. But if you think about safety and things like that, they might think, oh, well, your family's still in Riverrun with the Tullys. So, and then also Arya might be down there, so let's go do that. But what do you guys think?
If I was them, I would go as far away as possible from the north.
Because they have to know where Ramsay would be thinking they were going.
Well, not only that, but you know, what about the Walking Dead that is approaching them? Like they probably don't know it, but if I was them, and I just would go as far south as possible.
But Sansa then gets up and she approaches Theon, or Reek, to which you can see, like, he's really struggling with what he wants to do. He says, you know, if you go to the Wall, Jon will kill me. And Sansa says, no, you know, I won't let him because you saved me. But, you know, he says, I can't. He was like, I killed those farm boys. I killed Sir Roderick. I betrayed Robb. Like, you know, I'm as good as dead. And Sansa, I think, a little naively, is trying to encourage him, like, take the black, you know, because then all of your sins will be forgiven. But Theon, boldly says, I don't want to be forgiven. and decides that he's not going to go with them to the wall, asks if he can take a horse. And then Sansa says, where will you go? And says, I'll go to the Iron Islands. I'll go home, which is where we get the title of the episode from, I'm going to go home.
Right.
Which, why would anyone want to live in the Iron Islands is beyond me. God, it's just miserable.
Well, it's home. Home is where the heart is.
Well, I guess if you want to be miserable and never be forgiven, I guess it's a good place to go.
Yeah.
You think they could build better bridges.
Yeah, I was saying the same thing. You'd think that he'd have a cover.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just, you know, it rains a lot there. You think someone would say, we could build a cover here so he doesn't have to get wet as you're walking in between.
But this is another really interesting scene, I felt, at the Iron Islands that came to it. You have Yara talking to her father, Balon Greyjoy, who's the king. And they're discussing the loss of Deepwood Mott, which is in the north, just south of Bear Island, where the Mormonts are from. And Balon is stubbornly ordering a re-invasion of the north, and Yara just is looking at me, you're nuts. Like, we can't hold it, because, I mean, it's for pine cones and rocks. You know, we're most feared at sea, we need to do this. But Balon just ignores her. He orders her to do what I tell you to do, or I'll make a new heir, because he assumes that she will be his heir. As he leaves the room, he begins to cross the bridge, and you can see the storm coming down. The bridge is swaying, and a man appears hooded on the bridge, and this is actually Balon's brother, Euron, even though they don't say his name, but that's his name, is Euron. An interesting kind of intense scene. He claims that he's the drowned god, that your time has passed, now it's time for me to rule. And I'm the storm, you're in my way. And in this, Balon tries to stab his brother, Euron pushes him over the bridge to his own death.
Yeah, cuts his face, though, so I guess he got, you know.
Yeah, he was quick for an old man, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Got a little something in.
Yeah.
But very interesting. My guess is maybe we'll talk about it more in what happens in the book stays in the book. But I thought just the wind was going to knock him over. But this was more interesting for sure.
Right. Yeah. And then shortly after this, we see Yara vowing revenge for her father's death. And this also is another another Greyjoy, even though they don't say it on the show as well. This priest is Aeron Greyjoy, which is the youngest brother of the Greyjoys. And she just assumes that she will now rule, but he says, no, you're not queen, and that's not how our laws work. We're going to elect a new king by Kingsmoot, which is, I was extremely happy to see this, because this is actually back in book four. And for a lot of people, they thought they were just going to skip over the Greyjoy, Ironman struggle. So I'm excited to see where this goes on the show.
Nice.
Back to the wall in our final scene. We have Davos visiting Melisandre. And this is really kind of a strange scene for me as a book reader, because, and you've seen it on the show too, like Davos doesn't trust Melisandre.
Yeah.
He actually loathes her. You know, because they always butted heads with Stannis.
Yep.
And for all of a sudden for him to be nice to her and ask if there's any magic that can bring back Jon Snow just felt really obtuse to me.
Well, maybe it's just he was so desperate for something for Jon Snow, he didn't care that he didn't like this person. He was just...
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it was.
Mm.
He wants to do he wants to do the right thing. And the right thing for him is to bring Jon Snow back from the dead.
Mm.
I mean, I agree, he can't stand this woman. Especially if he saw her last week when she took off her necklace.
Listen, beauty's on the inside, all right?
I get that, but I think a lot of us were... I think I was more shocked at that than anything else in this two episodes. But anyway, I'm just kidding.
Most disturbing nude scene since The Shining?
Could have been. It could have been, yeah. But no, I think that that's... I agree with Jay. I think the greater good, I think, is what he's going for.
But again, I understand the frustration or the whatever, because it is a little off character. But again, I think he's just so desperate. He's like, okay, you haven't been useful at all to me this entire time, but can you finally be useful? That'd be really nice if you could be useful finally. Mm. That's kind of what I saw there.
Yeah. But it works. So, but, you know, you can see, like, in Moss Andre, though, she's really down on herself. You know, she says, you know, it's possible to bring him back, but not for me. I don't have this power. Everything I've ever done is a lie. She actually admits to Davos, you know, like, you've been right all along about me. The Lord of Light has never spoken to me. And, you know, Davos just has this great reaction. You know, he's like, well, fuck him then. You know, like, I'm not asking the Lord of Light. I'm asking you. And because he's never been a person of faith, and it was just awesome that, you know, he's like, you know, I believe in you. And then we kind of have I thought it was a really physically acted, well scene by her, because you see it, like, you can see the doubt in her face. You see it in the shaking of her hands. Like, yep. She washes John's wounds. She speaks the language. They don't tell us what she's saying, but she's
actually
saying something.
It's in Valyrian, whatever it is.
Did you think it was... Okay, because, like, her character is actually from past that land, and I wasn't sure if it was a foreign to where she's from. I've forgotten, God, it's like the Shadowlands or something. It's way east.
Well, according to the closed captioning, it said she was speaking Valyrian.
I need to do that. Turn on the closed captioning.
It does help with the viewing, by the way. People at home... With the names and the whatevers, it does help.
Yeah, I used to do that the first time we did this, and I used to have take notes. I did the closed caption.
Actually, I kind of like closed captioning anyway, because I don't have it as loud. But that's just me. I'm an old man.
I guess so.
But you got your hair, so that's okay.
Yeah, exactly. I got that going for me.
You got that. but, you know, she lays her hands on his chest. You know, and you can see it, like, she's fearful that it isn't working, so she repeats the same lines over and over again. And finally, she just looks over at Davos, and you can tell she's given up. It isn't going to work, so she leaves the room. The rest of the men, the wildlings, leave the room. And Davos sticks around, I guess, hoping that John will come back. But eventually, he just, as well, just puts his head down, walks out of the room. And you see Ghost kind of... look up with a little bit of hope, and then John gasps, and he's back.
Oh, man, it was an awesome scene. But I got to say, like, we paused it with maybe 15 minutes left, and we're like, oh, my God. So then when he, like, gasped for breath and it caught off, I was like, oh, come on, we had tons of time left. But it was actually, like, the 7 minutes for the more about this episode. So I thought that was – I was like, oh, come on.
Well, it could have been worse. You could have been watching in a hotel with bad internet, and that scene took like 10 minutes.
Oh, man.
And I kept going. I go, okay, come on. I forgot at this point, everybody's sleeping, and I'm waking them up.
But honestly, usually early seasons of Game of Thrones, it takes a while to heat up. But this was a fantastic episode. Like, so much good stuff. The flashbacks with Bran was great. All the storylines I thought were really solid, like a lot of story development and a hell of a closing scene to get us pumped for next week. But I thought it was a fantastic episode.
Absolutely. I think next week's is going to be just as good, too. Here's a question for you guys. This is a question that I did see online. Like, do you actually think Melisandre brought him back? Or do you think that he was kind of like Bran, and he had warged into Ghost, the dog, and then just at that time, he chose to come back into his own body, which is really strange.
But
a lot of people...
I don't know how to do it, though, with the loss of blood. Like, you can't, like, your body is still dead.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, he didn't have the white eyes thing going on.
Yeah.
Did he have the white eye thing going on?
He didn't. Okay.
Did not, no. That is a great theory, though.
I mean, it's not a bad thought at all. I don't know. But regardless, Jon Snow's back, so I'm happy. I'm like, yay! but no, just fantastic episode. And let's jump into what happens in the book stays in the book. And we also have
this is kind of spoilers, right?
Actually, you're right. Let's do the phone call, and then we'll get into what happens in the book stays in the book, so people can skip ahead if they don't want to participate and what happens in the book stays in the book. So let's first go to our first phone, first and only phone call for this week's episode. Brad, take it away.
Hey, Jay and Jack and Nick. This is Brad in Chicago calling about Game of Thrones, and I just finished watching the episode tonight. I have a kind of a crackpot theory. I think Cersei is going to kill Tommen, her son. I don't know why, but just the way they framed some of the reunion with him and her, and I think she just sees him for being weak, and she knows it. And that's just my theory, and I'm going to stick to that. So, all right. Talk to you later.
All right, Brad, thank you for the call. Very crackpotty, but I think there can't disprove it. I think it'd be interesting.
Here's my thought, though. Maybe Nick can answer this. Okay, I can see she'll, you know, he is weak. Like I said, I'm getting rid of the kid. He's just weak. But who becomes king?
Exactly.
She loses all her power, doesn't she? I mean, what power she has left? I mean, who takes over the throne?
That's a good question. I would think that the High Council at the time would have to pick. There had to be some kind of, because there is no more royal blood after that.
Right.
Even though they're not technically royal blood either.
No. Jaime get it?
I guess Sansa could be queen, but it'd be really contested.
Right. So it's got to be in Cersei's best interest.
Sansa, I mean Cersei, sorry.
I mean, but it has to be her best interest for somebody to I mean, I can see he's weak, he's hurting us by being so weak. But it is her son.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, killing him, she gains nothing from it.
Right. Yeah, I don't think she will. I think you'll definitely see her, because he asked for her help, you'll probably see her take more of a strong role, the Hand of the King type thing. And she has no, we've already seen that, she has no mind for politics. She just kind of does what she wants to do.
Right.
And it will all go amok, I'm sure. Something else is going to happen with the faith.
Yeah.
But I mean, I can't see. I mean, it would be interesting because some other theories I have about Cersei's death, of like who will kill Cersei. I mean, something definitely bad would probably happen to Tommen, but yeah. I don't think it'll be Cersei that does it.
Yeah,
maybe Tommen kills himself.
I don't know. I don't think he would die this season, but maybe not this season.
But if he considers himself a complete failure, he can't get his wife back. He can't, you know. Maybe he kills himself.
I just wanted to have sex again.
It was 3 seconds of joy.
Oh, man. But, Brad, thank you for the call. It's very crackpotty, and I definitely appreciate it and like it. All right, so now it is time for what happens in the book stays in the book. Again, Nick has read the book, so he has a greater understanding and context of the – well, maybe it's not shown in the show, and maybe scenes that we still haven't seen. So if you're super spoiler-free, skip ahead. Again, this isn't about spoilers or anything on the show. It's about talking about what has happened in the book that contrasts from what we've seen in the show. And then also maybe providing some more historical context to the scenes that we saw in the show. But just to be forewarned, if you are super spoiler-free, you don't even want to know anything about the books, you can just stop listening now. But Nick, take it away.
Sure. And you guys, you know, like if you guys think of something you guys want to answer that I might not have thought of like earlier, just feel free to shout out. But, yeah, so I've already said, like, the first thing that popped out was Hordor, because his real name is actually Walder, not Willis. It's just a small detail, but it's just something that was different that I noticed.
Did he talk in the book, or do we just know the name?
We just know the name. Okay. That's all we've ever known. So the speaking part was actually quite interesting, and it makes you wonder, will we see what happened to Hordor?
Was it physical or was it mental or what?
It doesn't look like he's had anything physical damage to him.
Right. So
it's got to be mental. He must have seen something that he shouldn't have seen.
Right, because we don't even know this in the book either. What's behind Hordor's Hordoring? And why did he choose that word of all things? It's got to be some kind of clue, maybe.
Maybe so he saw someone die that's a Stark, maybe?
Or maybe he was looking to use the door at Pleasure Ranch.
He could have been.
Hordor.
And that could have good job, Jay. That could have caused it. I think Nick is confused by Pleasure Ranch.
Any type of, you know,
prostitute at
no,
Pleasure
I
Ranch.
I got that. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I don't know if you guys noticed this, but the Children of the Forest got a very good upgrade from season 4, because in season 4 they kind of looked very children-like and a little alien. This one is a little bit closer to the book because a lot more CGI and makeup helped them. Because in the book, they're described as people with cat-like eyes. And if you noticed, she kind of looked like that, like a right out of Cats. And that they have brown skin, but with little white spots on them, like a young fawn deer. And so I saw that when she was talking to Willis outside. Not Willis,
she had a bit of a green kind of look to her, too, though, right?
Yeah, like a greenish brown, because they're supposed to blend in with the forest.
Yeah.
They're not even really supposed to be human-like, but naturally, as a show, they have to have young children to play them. But it makes sense, and I thought that was a little better done than the 2 seasons ago. Going to Tommen, his actual suspicions about Cersei murdering Trystane were actually spot on, but not in the show, but in the book, she actually had plotted to kill Trystane when he was supposed to arrive in King's Landing, but she wanted to blame it on highway thieves as he was coming up, kind of trying to rob him and have an accidental death, because she wanted nothing to do with Dorne, because she sees him as a rival. Like, no, these are my children. You're not going to be anywhere near my children. But in the book, Dorne, Prince Dorne, who's still alive in the book, received word of the plot and so denied Trystane to ever go to King's Landing. So Trystane is also still alive in the book.
Interesting.
You know, I mean, like I said, like we're really diverging now because these books aren't out. And the show is really going to become its own thing. But I'll try to just, you know, because some people like to know that stuff. Like, oh, how is it different? How is it not different?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the point of the segment. So that's good. Good, good, good.
Yeah. Okay, and like over in Slaver's Bay, Yunkai and Astapor are as well. They have been retaken, but it's not from necessarily from the slavers like revolting. It's really because there's a massive plague that's struck that area, and people are dying of dysentery and all kinds of things in the area. And so the slavers, being rich, have been able to stay away from the plague, and so they have naturally assumed their natural role of power. Whereas in the show, they haven't really explained it yet. The plague still could show up, but it's the way they're kind of describing it is more of a power struggle.
I kind of like the power struggle better, though, because I think that's more in line with Khaleesi's political struggles.
Mm.
But that's just me.
Yeah. I mean, they both work.
Yeah.
And then, obviously Tyrion is not seen, well, he hasn't confronted the dragons yet in the books.
Yeah.
But he does speak of their intelligence before because, you know, he's a natural reader.
Yeah.
And he's really yearns to see dragons, but he hasn't been able to put any of this into practice yet. The dragons are actually freed in book 5 by one of, because Dany has lots of suitors because they're trying to be the new king. Mm-hmm. And one of the suitors in the book just very stupidly went into the pen and freed them in the book.
Ah, okay. Did the dragons eat him?
No, they didn't eat him, but it's just one of those things like, oh, okay. But, you know, they ended up burrowing into the sides of this huge pit and things like that, and they're hard to find now because they're not chained to the floor. in the book.
Ah, okay.
And it makes me think, it's my theory, is that that Tyrion is actually taking over Quentin Martell. Like I said, like I was saying, Trystane last week was Quentin, because there's two sons of the Martells, and Quentin was sent to court Dany as well, as one of the suitors. And he had after she spurns him, he becomes fascinated with the dragons, and he wants to release them and actually ride one. And in the book, though, Quentin is burned alive. At least that's what they say, is that he's burned alive by one of the dragons. But I'm kind of one of those beliefs that they don't actually say it or show his body. So it makes me believe that he actually did be successful in riding a dragon. Because the Martells do have some Targaryen blood in them. And I kind of, this is leading to what Jack was saying earlier about could Tyrion ride a dragon? And it makes me think they're blending these two storylines together a little bit. There's always been a huge theory out there that Tyrion is actually a Targaryen. He's not a Tywin son. And if you remember that, and at the end of the season where he's on the crapper and he gets shot, that's his last thing he says is, you know, you're no son of mine.
Right.
And he says, you know, I am your son, and then he kills him. And there's always been a theory that when Tywin was handed the Mad King was in love, or he's had a crush, or lusted for Tywin's wife. And when he couldn't do anything about it, he sent his wife away, and she eventually gave birth to Tyrion. And on the way out, because he's a dwarf, he killed her. And that's kind of how that's one of the theories out there. And so that's what a lot of people think, is that Tyrion will be another Targaryen riding a dragon. But like I said, a lot of people do not like that theory, because they don't want Tyrion to be a Targaryen. They don't want it to all be a family thing of like, oh, we're all a big happy family, we're all Targaryens. Like, no, they like the idea of, like, no, Tyrion is his own man.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's... I mean, I'd be fine with it either way. I think it's interesting.
Mm.
It's an interesting play.
Arya, I kind of can get into this, but, you know, like I said, her storylines are all messed up. And much like Bran, much like Jon, much like a lot of them, they have these connections to animals, you know, the warging thing. And early in the books, she's called Cat of the Canals, and she kind of unconsciously kind of wargs into a lot of little cats in Braavos. And so she might do this feature maybe in the show, but you don't know.
Interesting.
And Roose Bolton is still alive in the books for now as well, and that's kind of why I was a little shocked that he died so early. I was like, oh, because I really like Roose. I didn't want him to die, so
yeah.
Just kind of that way. I wanted it to be a little bit better of a death.
Well, like you said, he's not a madman like Ramsay.
Right.
He's a bad guy, but he's calculated. He's whereas Ramsay is a mad dog, like you said.
Right. And like I said earlier, it had long been rumored in the books that Ramsay had killed Roose's first trueborn son years before with another wife. So this was to be expected. At least I thought we would see Walda and the son get killed, but not Roose. And so for all three of them to die was like, whoa.
Moral of the story is have a girl.
They get to pay for the wedding, and hopefully it's not a red wedding.
That's true. Yeah, I forgot about that.
What about the stuff with the Iron Islands? That was interesting. Anything about there? Or you mentioned
that?
Yeah,
that's my last.
Okay, sorry.
That's my last point. But I'll go ahead and get to it. On the Iron Islands, you have a little bit of stuff like Deepwood Mott, which is the town that their last stronghold. They said that they just lost. In the books, Stannis is the one who actually conquers this fortified city, because Stannis is still alive in the books as well. And it's actually Yara is there. She's the one holding the city. And when Stannis overtakes it, he takes her prisoner, and then also Sansa and Theon later get captured by Stannis. So at this point right now in the books, you have it's the girl who's pretending to be Arya, Theon and Yara, who are all prisoners of Stannis. Then I was really glad that they showed the bridge scene, because in the books it's just rumored that Euron killed his brother, Balon.
Oh, nice.
So this has been, you know, and to throw this back out there, like this, if you don't remember, in book three or in season three, I think it's in, yeah, when before the Red Wedding, you have Stannis. You remember the leeches, and they burned them, and
yeah,
he strung them into the fire. He says Robb, Joffrey, and Balon, but you never saw Balon's death. This was supposed to happen right then, but for some reason they decided to delay it until now. So actually, the blood magic, the blood ritual worked, and all three people that they got the king's blood from, you know, all three did die.
Oh, and this cool. Happens in,
okay, so this happens in book three, and it's kind of a throwaway little thing. It's like, oh, we heard that Balon Greyjoy fell over a bridge. And then that's it. And you're like, oh, that's kind of anticlimactic after you get the Red Wedding and then Joffrey dying at the Purple Wedding.
Yeah.
But let's see here. And then before, it's rumored that his brother, Euron, is the one who threw him over the bridge, but just never confirmed.
Mm-hmm. What's the whole, like, him being crazy and stuff like that or whatever, is that from in the books as well?
Yeah, like he's... There's actually another brother, too, called Victarion. But, yeah, he is... Euron is... he's kind of like a pirate, captain of a ship, but he's kind of like a rogue captain. And he's just kind of driven madness. A lot of people thought he was dead. And so his appearance is very odd. And oddly timed, especially that Balon died as soon as he shows up.
Yeah.
And so you'll see probably, I don't know if it'll be next episode, but soon when the Kingsmoot comes, you'll have, I don't know if they'll introduce Victarion or not, but you'll definitely have Euron and Yara campaigning to be the new king of the Iron Islands, for sure.
Interesting.
And then going back to Sansa and Brienne, obviously this is a totally new made-up scene. Brienne is not with Sansa in the books. She's still in the Riverlands area. She's never ran to Arya, and she doesn't know where she's at. So this is, like I said, it's kind of what I was saying. It kind of leaves it all up in the air, and that's why I kind of think that they'll try to merge Brienne's storylines a little bit with the way the book is, as in, like, don't make them go to the north, make them go to the south.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see.
Awesome. Well, great, great. What happens in the book stays in the book there. Again, a lot of awesome information. Cool that they're bringing some stuff back that was in previous books back into this one, and fleshing out the story more. That is a good place to call it for this week's Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick. If you would like to give a call for feedback, you can do so at 385-309-0311.
Call anytime.
And again, this show is made better by your feedback. So if you have any questions, comments, and or theories, again, give us a call at 385-309-0311 or send an email to lostpodcast@gmail.com. We want to send a special thanks to Tack from Tokyo, Eckhart Richter, and Brad from Chicago for contributing a significant amount over at our Patreon page at patreon.com/JayandJack. If you would like to become a patron today, you can do so by going to jayandjack.com and clicking on the Become a Patron link on the top of the page, and you can become one of our 130-plus patrons today, and you can see a full list of every single patron that we have, no matter what the contribution is, thanking them on our jayandjack.com page. Also, if, again, we talked about earlier, if you'd like to participate and get some geeky goodness delivered to your door for under $20 a month, you can do so over at lootcrate.com/JayandJack. And for each package bought, the Jay and Jack family gets a little kickback as well. So it helps everybody. You get some good geeky stuff, and we can keep the lights on. All right, guys.
We're like Motel 6, huh?
Yeah. Or maybe we can get Nick some good internet over there. I don't know. thanks again to Nick and to Jack, and we'll see you guys next week for another, what I assume will be an exciting episode of Game of Thrones. Until then, hasta luego, and goodbye.
Bye.